right, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast.
Yes, with Drew and
I'm assuming you don't listen to many podcasts if that's the case, but you're listening to your favorite podcast.
Yes.
The Look Mum I'm Hustling podcast.
Top five at least, you know.
Stats would say otherwise, but yeah, sure.
That's fine. Well, you know, it's we're doing our thing. We're tripping along with our episodes.
I think this year we're going to have a few more people at the end of the year with the Spotify Wrapped that have us as a top pod.
I think so.
And it's simply just because I don't play any podcasts through Spotify anymore. So it's going to be just me
watching
my own content.
How you listen to your podcast then?
Mostly through YouTube. This is a topic we can jump straight into if you want. Joe Rogan's back on YouTube.
He is too.
I literally have it here. So that was, we've managed to segue into the first topic within the first 2 minutes, which is rare. Normally we'd go into 90s movies or fashion. Or
what we've been up to this week.
What episode number it is. Now we're going straight into it. So Joe Rogan's back on YouTube. He's still linked up with Spotify.
Yes.
But now he has the ability to distribute the podcast into other platforms because the initial Spotify deal was the exclusivity rights.
Yes.
And they kind of went after a bunch of big players in the podcasting world. They got Emma Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. They got, I don't know what her name is, from Call Her Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
They got a bunch of big players. But Joe Rogan's back on YouTube now. And I think Spotify's kind of got that acquisition of talent phase done. And now they're just basically just trying to build a better platform as opposed to the talent acquisition.
Well, because he's been on YouTube, is about like 3 weeks now, maybe two.
I think he has about four episodes out. His first one was with
Cat Williams,
which was, you haven't listened to it, have you?
I think I've listened to like the first like 10, 15 minutes.
It's a wild one.
Yeah. Well, Cat Williams is just like a wild dude. But it's really interesting because when you go to Spotify and you watch or listen to your podcast episodes, it doesn't tell you how many views like that particular episode gets. And like we're trying to find like a podcast to listen to today on the way home. And it's kind of annoying because every podcast will come up that has that particular topic in mind. Like, well, I don't want some like C-grade person talking about it.
Do a quick ranking of like the credibility or the reach, or like you just can't gauge how good that platform is. Yeah. And not that views should be an indication, but it is one indication.
It is that it's like a decent episode, especially if it's been out for just say a week and it's already ranked up a lot. You're like, okay, this is a decent amount. All you can really go off on Spotify is like how many reviews or like stars, like or rating that someone has.
That's a good point.
So
people don't engage with Spotify like that.
No.
But the good thing about Joe Rogan being back on YouTube is the comment sections can either get wild or be insightful or helpful.
With Spotify, you
can't really, no, I'm going to interrupt your interruption. With Spotify, you can't really do much other than leave a rating or review, which is very, very rare. And then now they have a feature where you can essentially answer like a poll to a
question.
Like if it's
Joe
Rogan talking about Cat Williams, you can be like, do you agree with Cat Williams on this? And it's like literally just a yes or no poll.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not that social media community aspect to it. It's purely just for consumption.
Yeah.
So it is good that it's back on YouTube now. But yeah, the Cat Williams one was a bit wild. If you're into aliens, history, the paranormal, kind of not technically conspiracy theories, but a bit of a mix of those wild sort of
just the not
esoteric
normal, like,
topics.
Thinking. But what I find really interesting, the fact that it's on YouTube now, is like love him or hate Joe Rogan, he's very diverse in like the opinions that people like either like or don't like him, right? But now you can really see like with the amount of views that he gets, like the reach that he actually has, which is
after being, because you could see him before it went onto Spotify, but now that he's come back, it's, you can see the progression, the growth. And he has still done his clips the whole time.
Yes.
But that's not an indication of the obviously the full length episode
or
itself.
Or just that long form in general. And he's really kind of like made it super popular. But the whole reason why Spotify got him on there in the first place was to make Spotify the number one destination or the number one place you'd look for podcasts. And it's not his job, right? So they don't really need him anymore. They're still getting advertising through him because now when you think of Joe Rogan, you think of Spotify. Right? Yep. Or like that Spotify deal. And it's just kind of like worked out for them. And I think Spotify recently won like a court case in the EU against like Apple around the App Store and stuff like that. So they must have like pushed them down in rankings or something. But yeah, it's just like super, super interesting.
So the Cat Williams one has 12 million in 7 days.
12 million.
And then he's had a few other. He's had like Zack Snyder on. But yes, 12
million.
Oh, Zack
Snyder one would be interesting.
Yeah, not really.
Like, oh, no, I like listening to directors and stuff.
Yeah, I suppose. I'd like to like his movies. Mm. They're never as good as you think they're going to be. The thumbnails are
just plain,
quite plain.
Yeah. They want to set them apart from the clips that they have on there. So,
well, there's probably some regulations around what they can and can't do. I don't believe there was any ads at the pre-roll ads or mm-hmm. mid-roll ads in the actual episode.
Interesting.
So obviously they're getting views from AdSense mm-hmm. somehow, some way, but it's pretty part of it. There's something to do with the Spotify deal. It'd be so, the Spotify deal that Joe Rogan's done there's so many intricacies with who gets paid on what mm-hmm. platform. And so it's.
Well, I think he's talked about this before. Like, he only wants ads that he believes in. So that might be a thing for him. Like, he doesn't want just some
maybe
random YouTube
they don't
ads.
Even, maybe they don't even have ads on these at all. And as part of Spotify's agreement, you can post them there, but you cannot get paid for, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's not like he needs any more money
anyway. That's the thing, and he's not like a money-hungry sort of
no
celebrity like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so what was I saying? How did I lead? I need to segue back out of that topic now.
No, we're talking about, I can't even remember. We're just a few viewing on the YouTubes. I can't remember now. That's great. Anyway, should we just go to the next topic?
While on the topic of YouTube,
yeah.
Mr. Beast is pivoting his entire philosophy for content creation on YouTube.
When I was putting in my articles for today, I saw that Mr. Beast article, right? And like, to be honest, I haven't watched any of his videos. Of course I've watched some of them, but it's probably been a good like 3 to 6 months since I've kind of like watched it, because I get it. It's like they're big, they're fantastical, they're like over the top big production, but like it's just like once you've seen, you just know you're going to get a big overproduction, so it's kind of like boring.
It's like, how many days in a row can you go and get a big gulp or a slushy and have that sugar hit before mm-hmm. you're like, okay, I need to drink some water. I need something calm. I need some green tea, some chamomile, because all this sugar mm-hmm. has been jacking me up, and it's fun for a little while, but there's a crash at the end of it.
Yeah, I need some like
back down to
healthy,
earth.
Some like green tea or something like that.
I just said that. You're just using my analogy.
Whatever. And he was doing the rounds, but like all the like other creators were like talking about him and trying to emulate him and saying like he's like one of the best YouTubers out there. And like,
I wouldn't say he's one of the best YouTubers. He's one of the best at
the YouTube
attention
game. Yeah,
for
yeah.
that.
Well,
but it's so subjective. One of the best YouTubers could be, is it the most helpful how-to video?
Okay, let me say one of the biggest YouTubers.
No, I just like keeping things in perspective, because it's like there's so much criteria that you could make that claim mm-hmm. on.
Well, I'd say like Casey Neistat's one of the best YouTubers. Would that be a good claim to make?
Well, then you just zoom out a bit further and just say vloggers.
Yeah, I'm just talking about him in general. Anyway, it was just everywhere. Like Mr. Beast was everywhere. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was talking about how you can get views and become popular and all that kind of thing. And like, we make our own YouTube videos and everything, but that's not like what we're about when we're creating. We're not like creating something with the intention of being like, I want this to be the biggest video of all time. We're more just creating because we want to create something. Oh, little mini segue. I finally got my video out.
Drop it. I mean, you handle the descriptions for these, so if you want to plug it, you can plug it. I don't really have
I don't think anybody cares. That's fine. But anyway, I got it done and I really enjoyed it, and Drew helped me with the audio and stuff, so thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Drew's good with the ASMR.
Yeah, we're paying a lot of money for your music bed audio subscription, so please don't waste $500 on just two songs.
I don't know. It just sucks. Everything's in USD.
Mr.
So that's
Beast
fine.
Has made a pivot in his approach. So this is one of his X or tweets mm-hmm. from the current week. This is me reading the tweet, obviously. Mm-hmm. This past year, I've slowed down our videos, focused on storytelling, let scenes breathe, yelled less, more personality, longer videos, etc. And our views have skyrocketed. My fellow YouTubers, this is a call to arms. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of the ultra fast paced overstim era of content. It doesn't even work. Well, it clearly has worked for him.
It's worked for him. He's probably just like sick of being like, what he's saying is like, stop copying me. Like, you don't need that many of the, you know, win $500,000 if you stay in this room the longest. Yeah.
And I think we mentioned this, and it's not that we're ahead of the time or, you know, are predicting future trends or anything.
No.
But there was an article I read probably around Christmas time, maybe even a little bit before that, about the new wave of people that are doing less edits. I think I mentioned Sam Sulek,
the bodybuilder,
the powerlifter dude.
Yeah.
And basically no music, no lower thirds, no animations, no real camera tricks or editing tricks. It's just the storyline, raw as possible, and letting like just the story speak for itself without the need for the production to carry you through the video. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that Mr. Beast, probably the most closely watched creator at the moment, has decided to like change it back.
Mm-hmm.
Not even change it back, just change it. Because one of his, a lot of his initial videos is just him playing like Counter-Strike.
Oh, 100%.
Like that.
That's how he like...
Or like saying, singing Jake Paul's song for 24 hours or saying Logan Paul for 24 hours.
Yes.
I mean...
I know. Like he's
come a long way, but it's now he's going back a different way. So yeah. Now people, it's going to be a whole new like era for the next few years mm-hmm. for YouTube. Because like you said, people watch him, want to emulate him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to want to emulate him regardless of what he does. If he just wants to sit and play FIFA all day, people mm-hmm. are going to be playing FIFA all day.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if people are even comfortable doing that because they're going to rely on your personality and the interesting elements on your in your day, in your video, as opposed to trying to hack each second of the video and make it retention grabbing and attention grabbing for retention rather.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see how people can actually pull that off.
Yeah. Well, people always want to emulate people that are doing well because they want to do well themselves. So, you know, because he's got the views people want to copy. Did that make sense? You're like giving me a weird look.
No, I'm thinking about something in a book that I read about inferiority and attaching yourself to superiority. So when you're inferior mm-hmm. at something, you want to attach yourself to something or someone that is superior at it.
Yeah.
And it basically lifts you out of, if you can just imagine like a, I don't know, like a ladder, for example,
mm-hmm.
inferior at painting,
yeah.
superior at painting. You're trying to attach yourself to someone higher up on a higher mm-hmm. rung as much as possible. So you can kind of move up the rankings, if that makes sense.
I think that's the turning pro mentality, right? Stephen Pressfield of like.
Probably is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same as all, I think, like when you surround yourself, just say if you're an athlete or whatever, and you surround yourself with like the top five, you're going to get to that point as well. But if you surround yourself with the bottom five, you're going to like, your standard's going to lower.
But are the top five trying to guide you in the wrong direction because they don't want their mantle to be touched?
Depends what you're about, I guess.
Because if you're like, oh yeah, stretch this way, and you've never done it like that because mm-hmm. you want them to injure themselves.
Well, that's pretty mean-spirited. So.
People are mean.
Yeah, I guess they can be.
Life is evident of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some interesting news there on the YouTube and podcasting front.
All right. Well, that actually makes me curious. I don't want to watch that video now. So interesting.
I don't. The thumbnails aren't in. It's just the thumbnails are too much for me.
They're well, it kind of looks like
iRobot?
No, not iRobot. Not Uncharted, but like it looks like the
It's a Will Smith dystopian movie.
Probably. But it's all CGI, 100%.
AI.
CGI?
What would be cheaper? Hey, can we pay you $1,000 to make this or run it through AI?
AI is probably, yeah.
For sure AI.
The kind of background.
The thumbnails, to me, they're just not authentic or organic enough. They're just a little bit too extreme.
Yeah, well, you got the overproduced and the underproduced. You just got to...
It's too much because you know, like, you're not going to see anything like that in the video. So I'm tapped out immediately.
You'd rather see something that's kind of like an actual snapshot from the video.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just know that is not enticing to me. And maybe it's because of my mindset and experience with his previous fast-paced videos.
Mm-hmm.
So unless if he didn't post this X or tweet about the new changes making, I would assume it's going to be the same as the other ones.
Yes.
So it adds another layer of me not wanting to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if – I feel like the thumbnails have to kind of fall in line with the video itself as well. You can't go from highly produced to lowly produced
mm-hmm.
and still have the over-the-top thumbnails because it's kind of like wrapping a turd in like what's something nice.
Just like wrapping paper. I don't know. Gold.
Gold or like an Easter egg foil or something.
Yeah.
You want the chocolate, you don't want the poop, right?
That's true, yes.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Lacking analogies this week.
Uh-huh.
I got an interesting topic about Bitcoin. Could mm-hmm. take us a while to get through. Do you have anything interesting you want to touch on?
Newgrounds. No, sorry. I was just looking at that because just a little side thing. So I was looking – so I've mentioned Rooster Teeth, right? And you're like, who the hell are they? So the ones that made, you know, the Red vs. Blue cartoon. The
Halo.
Yeah, they made their own kind of like Red vs. Blue. Warner Bros. Bought them up. Warner Bros. They bought them up, but now they're shutting them down. Yeah.
I know that. Were they a YouTube?
They were. So they were just kind of like, that's how they started, right? So this kind of like small YouTube channel used to just make their own. They would play games, right? They would like record the games and then they'll record voices over like Halo and stuff. And then they'll make like funny videos, just like Red vs. Blue. So just like a bunch of gamers then turn that gameplay into like a TV show or like a series.
Yeah.
And then they started to.
So they're just dorks that
that made a production company.
They're kind of comedians, yeah. But they're only comedians if you're in that dork space. Yeah. I'm not trying to like, if you watch this, I don't know. I'm just like trying to like grasp the concept.
You say dorks like as if you're not like, into not like Star Trek.
They're not like, yeah, but they're not like comedians that are going to like get on Netflix and make you laugh.
No.
The jokes are really just for more dorks.
Oh, yeah. They're just like the in-game, like game jokes and stuff. And then obviously they made like a more serious Rorby, the anime kind of thing that got released into like stores and everything. But
they look like dorks.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with looking like dorks. Dorks make the world go round. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the biggest businesses on earth run by dorks.
But it was just like, it was like a small like YouTube channel that kind of grew into like a production company, and then they got bought up by like Warner Brothers, which is like pretty interesting. But obviously, you know how Warner Brothers had that big shake-up.
Oh, right.
Yeah, just like closing them down. So this company that's been around for 21 years that have like this really like hardcore fan base, they celebrated their 20th birthday last year, and now they're getting shut down.
So why are they getting shut? They're just like budget cuts, just content cuts.
Well, Warner Bros. Have been making like heaps of budget cuts and stuff, and like cutting off their shows and just like rechanging, reformatting.
They're going to read through. Is it like a long article? Are we reading through this?
Or? No, it's just like an interesting point, because like you've just talked about YouTube, and like this is where these people have started, kind of thing, like on the YouTube forum.
And there's a bunch of these. I don't know. I don't really watch any of them, but I know Dude Perfect is like in that elk. And then what's the other? The guy with the long hair and the guy with the quiff?
Smosh?
No.
Oh, Mystical Mornings.
Yeah. What's like, these are like from that
Red and Link. Yeah.
They're from that same era where they've been around for 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they have full production companies essentially.
Yes. Well, Red and Link. They're Mystical Mornings, I think, is their production company, but they've just recently bought back Smosh. So they've like, no, they bought Smosh off like that other big company, and now Smosh have bought themselves back from.
Okay.
Yeah, so just this interesting thing.
And they've all got brands. I think even Ryan Trahand the other day released, have you seen this? He released, you know how they eventually get into products?
Yeah.
So you have Logan Paul doing Prime. You have Mr. Beast doing Feastables.
Feastables, yeah.
Ryan Trahand's got a... Is it like the sour? What are the strips?
Oh, yes. I told him. Like, he's got, like, the sour gummies or something that he was, like, plugging. Yeah, I watched I'm pretty sure it was, like, an Airbnb, like, sponsored video.
It was, like, have you seen the video, though?
Yeah, I watched the video, yeah. My God.
The production is ridiculous. It's a full movie. It's basically a full movie.
Well,
it's a movie trailer announcing the actual candy.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that video. No, I'm talking about his, like, most recent, just, like, his Airbnb kind of, like, plugging
this is,
one.
I have collected...
This one here called My Last Video from 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we can play it. Who cares if you get flagged? It's literally a movie trailer for his new product.
Yeah.
Doubt anyone's even going to watch this video, but...
Because straight away you're like, what's going on? What's on his lips
and stuff, yeah. Is he pretending he's lost in the desert?
The hardest part was knowing when it was time to give up. But... Wait, what?
So it's this full
entry last
like Last Man on Earth type of scenario. He's trying to work out what's going on.
Look at the production, yeah, the colouring.
Oh, the colour grading.
Yeah.
And basically the whole video is about him being pretty much addicted to sugar and it's leading into him making a sugar-free lolly.
Gotcha.
Or candy, as you would call it.
Yeah.
But he has a bunch of YouTubers.
Like plugging it for him and stuff, yeah. Oh, yeah, so Mr. Beast.
Yo, Ryan, wake up, baby. You gotta try this new candy. Call me back.
Say one thing to Ryan right now. What would it be?
Ludwig or someone? I don't know.
Good morning, sleepyhead. We've got live reports from
across the region. This bit's funny.
Is that Colin and Samia? Yeah.
We're not even driving. That guy's really gone off the deep end.
So it's basically him like making his brand, and it's essentially a sugar-free candy strip thing, like a sour strip thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they all kind of end up going into that, the product thing, because it's, I imagine, obviously there's no creativity involved.
Mm-hmm.
After the product's released, all you do is maintain the production line.
Yeah.
And then Dude Perfect, I think we mentioned it a month or two ago as well, made the
kids, vitamins.
Kids gummy. Yeah. So it's just interesting when you get to that 1, 5, 10 million subscriber mark, you really have to become a legitimate business or have other avenues outside of the videos.
Yeah. So you
can't just be on top of YouTube forever. No. It's shown time and time again.
Yeah. So you either become like a production company and produce like other shows and stuff like that, or you make products and everything to have like that income coming through. Yeah. So it's just like an interesting thing because like Rooster Teeth, they're part of like that early kind of like internet and stuff, which is why like Newgrounds was up because like I remember going on Newgrounds and that's where people would put their first, like they would start creating games. You'd put it on Newgrounds and get people to like get interested and then you'd put it on Steam or you'd have, you remember like Salad Fingers and stuff, that would be on Newgrounds, like all these like memes and little TV shows that people used to like create and then you get like fan interest and then they get fan funded and then become like a full-fledged
show. There's a similar thing for like technology and software and apps and not really startups, but just if you have an app idea or a Chrome extension idea and you need funding, you can, I forget what it's called, but it's essentially just to gauge interest in things and then help them get scaled up or get backing.
Yeah, so like Newgrounds is either full of like cartoons, anime, or like games that people can like test and play and stuff. So,
it's basically Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But for... content in a way.
Oh, it's it's always like it's like a Pinterest, like a what's a DeviantArt kind of thing.
Oh, but for like DeviantArt.
Yeah. But it's just like a way to like put your content out
there. Amazing.
Pardon?
Be amazing.
That sounds so
body
familiar.
Modification?
No.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, they'll have like, but I totally forgot this even existed. Like I used to go on this religiously when I was younger, like in my early 20s. But it's just funny, like, because, yeah, Rooster Teeth reminded me of this. I'm like, oh, I totally forgot this kind of platform existed. It's just like, this was like a massive part of like the early internet. And just obviously things have kind
people
of...
People have a lot of time on their hands to make like Pokemon, like parodies and...
Yeah. Oh. But ever since like, this was like kind of before-ish YouTube, right? So I think when YouTube started to get popular, that kind of like took over to watch like people's own content, you know, their cartoons that they're making, their
introduce
animations.
Introduce an algorithm and then have the subscriber and the like functionality.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the takeaway message? Don't get big enough where you can get acquired by a mega corporation.
Like Warner Brothers, they're going to shut you eventually. Down. Yeah. Do your own thing always and try and be in control of your own content, I guess.
Own your own masters, as Nipsey Hussle would say.
Ah, nice one. I like that one. Own your own masters. But own your own shit.
You don't have to buy it back. Look at Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Or even Smosh. They went through this whole thing of wanting to buy their own stuff back. So.
Yeah. If someone tried, I don't know. I'm not a business person or, you know, a manager of talent, but it's shown time and time again, and especially as the internet ages up and there's more evidence and more history and examples of these sort of things happening, it's like just own your shit as long as possible. Don't, like, or people that sell, like, Netflix specials and they can't, like, they sell it to, like, Comedy Central or something, then Comedy Central's like, you can't do anything with it for 10, 15 years, then you got to buy it back later and then release it yourself, all these sorts of things. It's usually just for the quick buck to make a quick $500,000 bag at the start of your career. But if you had have held out and released it all on Netflix when you actually popped off, you might have 10x'd how much your net worth is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, we're not selling any Look Mum episodes to anyone anytime soon.
No.
Speaking of selling and buying, I got some Bitcoin news. It's kind of back in the spotlight, back in the media cycle at the moment.
I've seen so many headlines just saying like Bitcoin is back, like as if it, like I don't think it's really gone anywhere, but I know during COVID, NFTs were massive, like crypto was massive.
That was and 3 years ago.
And then it kind of like, everyone said it crashed and it kind of like died off and it kind of like just went underneath the radar for so long. But now the past week, I'm just seeing so many like Bitcoin.
So it's kind of back in the news cycle because it's hit an all-time, it's new all-time high this week. It's dropped back a little bit. But there's a couple of reasons why it's kind of popping off now and why you're hearing about it more now compared to like 2020. And then 2021 was kind of the Ethereum and altcoin and NFT push and it all kind of dropped off quite a bit then. Oh, since then, there's a few reasons coming into a US election year. So there's more political talks, economy talks, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. So all these agendas and policies are kind of like very much front in mind at the moment.
And two of the main reasons that Bitcoin peaked this week is, I'll just read it off the article here. This is from CBS News, so I don't know. I don't know which US news sources are the most reputable, but
we're here down under. Please let us know if there is a reputable. I can never say this
reputable.
Word. Reputable. Reputable news source that we should be going
to. I'm sure it's fine, but they would have their bias. Let's put it that way. The price of Bitcoin has reached a record high, continuing its rapid resurgence that began in late 2023. The digital token rose to 28,818 That'll be USD. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday morning, well above its $44,000 valuation at the start of the year. So it's gone up 24K since the start of the year.
Yeah, I think you said 28, so 68,000.
Oh, 68, sorry.
That people
so it's
seeing.
Gone from 44 to 68 mm-hmm. Since the start of the year.
That's a lot.
And what's fueling the rally? So basically Bitcoin is now in demand because it is part of Bitcoin ETFs, exchange traded funds. We have a couple ourselves, just typical Vanguard ones that track some of the biggest companies. And they essentially, you diversify your portfolio by having one small investment and the percentage. So it might just have, like as an example, an ETF might have a little bit of Apple, a little bit of Microsoft, a little bit of Amazon, a little bit of Nvidia, all these things. And the percentages can vary depending on how successful the company is, this and that. But you're kind of exposing yourself a little bit to all of them. Mm-hmm. And the person or the company, whatever it is running the ETF, balances out what is more heavily weighted. Mm-hmm. So you're essentially ultimately and ideally always making money.
So these bigger companies and these bigger ETFs are now starting to incorporate Bitcoin into their portfolio.
They're specific Bitcoin ones.
Apple and you can do Bitcoin all in the same portfolio.
There probably is or probably will be, I imagine. I'm not sure how that works. We're not financial experts.
But it's just starting to enter into that mainstream conversation of like these big companies that are being like sort of
they form the ETF. Yes. They're like, oh, I think we need a little bit of this, little bit. It's the ingredients to a recipe essentially. Yeah. To make the best croissant, we need a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this.
But the fact that they're now starting to include, it's like massive, right?
And it makes people get into it easier because getting into Bitcoin, you need to kind of understand the security implications, knowing where to store it, how to buy it, tax liabilities and that sort of thing if you buy and sell. Mm-hmm. When it's in an ETF, you don't own it directly. You own the exposure to the thing.
Yes.
So it takes a lot of the burden off for any sort of investor because they don't have to get their hands dirty in the crypto world. Mm-hmm. They're just paying for a slip of paper basically that says there's some Bitcoin at the other end of this.
Yeah.
Super simplified explanation. Mm-hmm. But basically the ETFs with Bitcoin started in January. And as it says here, it allows investors to dabble in crypto with a less riskier way than ever before, has attracted a huge influx of cash this year. Investors are getting turned onto the fact that Bitcoin can be treated as an uncorrelated asset, which makes it extremely attractive for portfolio diversification. A spot Bitcoin ETF allows investors to gain direct exposure to Bitcoin without actually holding it. Mm-hmm. Unlike regular Bitcoin ETFs in which Bitcoin future contracts are the underlying asset, so you're kind of guessing and forecasting what price it will be. Mm-hmm. Bitcoins are the underlying asset of a spot Bitcoin ETF. It's managed by a firm that issues shares of its Bitcoin holdings. Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of technical, but basically what it's saying is it's kind of like an IOU as opposed to holding the actual thing.
Gotcha.
Again, simplified summary. Don't come at me. Mm-hmm. For that reason, since the creation of these ETFs in January, investors have deposited some $7.35 billion into the 11 different funds that were available, some of which were the world's largest institutional investors, including BlackRock and Fidelity. So literally the companies that own, like BlackRock owns like 30, 40, 50% of the biggest businesses in the world, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
So the biggest people in the world are starting to
pay attention
and buy it up and without the risk of holding $7 trillion on some USB somewhere, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're taking the risk out of it by having the ETF version. Mm-hmm. So that's driven the price up substantially. And it's only, I imagine, this is not financial advice, it's going to get even more sought after by these big corporations.
Yes.
Because they, from what I understand, they don't want to jump straight in at the first chance they get. They want to bide their time, have all the ducks in a row and make sure it's not a sure thing, but make sure they're making the right choice at the right time as opposed to jumping too early. Mm-hmm. So it's still early days in the world of having these ETFs available. Mm-hmm. So in 12 months' time, in 18 months' time, there's still going to be more and more of these big financial institutions getting into it.
Yeah.
So it's I think there's going to be a lot happening this year for sure.
Yeah. Well, like crypto in general and Bitcoin as well, they're still saying it's quite volatile. Like a lot of stocks can be. It goes up
and
down.
It is the most volatile.
It can go up and down all the time. But like from what I understand out of, because there's, even though Bitcoin is in the headlines and stuff at the moment, there's like 1,000 other coins that people can like, there's still heaps out there. Just people aren't really talking about it. From like what I understand though, that Bitcoin's kind of like the gold of like the currency. It's like the most stable out of all the volatile currencies?
I can't. I don't know. Yes, because it's the most known and it's it's the most incorporated into other elements of life.
Because like everything's matched up because like, you know, when people do like the gold, like when people match up like the Australian dollar or whatever, they like compare it to like what's the price of gold and stuff at the moment.
Essentially,
that's
kind
of like, everyone's comparing it to the price of like the Bitcoin.
What you're saying is technically correct.
Yeah.
But all the altcoins, they rise with Bitcoin as well. Not to say they're good investments or good opportunities, but it's rising tide lifts all boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as Bitcoin moves up, everything else kind of moves up. And the reason for that is if you look at any of the charts of the price movements of these things, they're always in relation to Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're saying gold and the dollar, when you look at the chart, it's showing AUD / USD or whatever it is in correlation, all the altcoins are compared to the rise of Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin's rising, everything else technically
it's
has to
go
rise
up
as
well.
That's just a dummy's version of explaining it.
But again, obviously when it goes down, everything else goes down as well. So
yeah. But it's interesting because economy is kind of wild at the moment.
Mm.
Inflation's through the roof. Cost of living is going through the roof.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin's still kind of charging upwards for that reason of ETFs. And also big stuff coming, I think in a month or two, in 44 days, is the next Bitcoin halving. So that's going to create more interest as well.
So there's probably going to be heaps of buzz around there. That's really interesting. Bitcoin.
Do you know what that is? Or you just.
Well, no, because like. Because they've pretty much harvest all the Bitcoins you can harvest, right?
No.
So, I thought the like they're just halving the current coins in half, like they're separating them.
Bitcoin, basically, when the Satoshi dude made it in whatever 2009, at the end of the either during the GFC or just shortly thereafter, everything to do with Bitcoin has been coded and it's been forecast for how it's going to operate for decades to come, like 100 years in time. So the way it works, it'll literally explain it here. As part of Bitcoin's coin issuance, so the there's new Bitcoin released every day by people that are mining it.
Yes.
So people have computers running and they work in blocks. So a block is like 10 minutes long. And basically what the miners do is they're just doing calculations the whole time.
Yeah, the computer stuff.
And the person who has... does basically the calculation the best or the fastest. I'm not sure how it's allocated. They get awarded a certain amount of Bitcoin for completing the task fastest.
Gotcha.
Like a bunch of kids in a school test. Whoever finishes it first gets to go to recess first.
Gotcha.
Again, dummy's guide. So there's new Bitcoin getting released every day. What's...
Sorry, I just had a moment. It's all good.
Checking all the...
Everything's recording. Yeah.
There's Bitcoin released every day, right? Miners are awarded a certain amount of Bitcoins whenever a block is produced. So they're basically getting a Lego set, building a block. That happens every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
When Bitcoin first started, 50 Bitcoins per block were given as a reward to miners.
Gotcha.
So the person that completed the block first, 50 Bitcoins. So imagine if you were literally in week one and you just built like 10 blocks and you got 500 Bitcoins and you still held it today. Anyway, they're pretty sold it by now.
Yep.
After every 210,000 blocks, which is approximately every 4 years, so that's 210,000 blocks every 10 minutes, 4 years, the block reward halves and will keep on halving until the block reward per block becomes zero. So it started at 50.
Yep.
And then after 4 years.
To 25.
25.
Yep.
And then all the way down until it's zero, right? Right now, it's at 6.25 coins per block, so around 900 a day.
Interesting.
So that's 900 new Bitcoin coming into existence every day.
Yeah.
And now it's going to get cut into half. Now, we had the conversation in the car this morning about inflation. And you can probably remember during COVID, they were just printing money.
Yes.
The US government, treasuries or whatever it is, just print money to keep the economy alive. As you print more money, it becomes less and less useful because there's more of it, which means it just starts fucking up the economy completely.
Interesting.
So as less comes out, becomes more scarce. We all know supply and demand.
Interesting. Okay, so there's a finite amount of
ultimately over the time
Bitcoin available.
Each four years, it drops a little bit.
So there would be like a mad rush to try and make as many blocks as possible to get as many Bitcoins as possible before it drops down
again.
Which
means you need better computers and everyone's compete. People, there's probably people that have 1,000 computers and a full warehouse and have operations.
Oh, 100%.
You can invest into mining operations.
Yeah, you've seen those images of like mining warehouses.
Yeah.
Like in Russia and all those kind of places.
So I believe the year 2140 is when it technically
is zero.
Becomes zero. So it's 100 more years. So that's kind of how it works, and it's halving soon. Mm-hmm. So there's less Bitcoins produced every day, means they're more scarce, which increases the value. And then you can see how in 100 years, if that doesn't get completely demolished by the SEC or the government or whatever it is, or competing blockchain technology wipes it out, how this could literally, who knows how much a Bitcoin could be in the future.
Yeah, well, almost means like, not means, but it's like try and get some Bitcoin while you can, in a way.
You can't say that.
No? Okay.
I think you should say, do your research.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. again, what I said was just like, is that what kind of like this article sort of talking about? We're not financial.
No, this is just giving the data, but I'm saying the reasons why the price is like jumped up to the new all-time high is the ETFs.
Right.
And now from January to like March, April, there's like a 3 or 4 month gap. There's a very interesting period.
Right. So like once that 44 days is up, it's going to be very interesting, like what it's going to happen to like the pricing and everything.
Usually this is a chart here of when the halvings happen.
And
I think on average is a delay of about 100 days or something. I can't remember the actual number, but it's not like the day after it halves, it shoots up. It takes a couple of months of lag time. But yeah, that's kind of the two main reasons that it's in the news right now.
Oh, okay. I had no idea about the halving of the Bitcoin.
So that's how they create a finite amount.
Yeah.
Because the government in the US tomorrow, they did it in the GFC. They bailed out all these gigantic companies because they were going to, all the banks and everything were going to go belly up because they were buying like really poor assets in terms of the mortgages that people couldn't afford and things like that. We've seen The Big Short, obviously, a couple of times. All the banks got bailed out because they just kept producing money to make sure they didn't fall through their ass.
What? It's just so interesting. Like, what bizarre and, like, unique coding to, like, make that happen?
It's not that technical when you're looking. I haven't looked into it, but from all accounts, it's not the most crazy thing ever. Obviously, it is crazy, but it's not like there's, like, you know, it takes you a year to read the code. Like the white paper is like only like 17 pages or something.
Yeah. But it's just like, it's a very unique concept, right? And for the fact, like, I mean, I guess this is the guy's dream, right? Because he like wanted an alternative form of currency. Like now it's starting to get talked about in like mainstream, like ETFs and like companies like BlackRock are like interested in it. Like that was the plan, right? That's the wanting to like disrupt the current.
Because you don't know what the government can just fuck it up in a heartbeat.
Oh, you can just put more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then your house, if the house is worth less or like whatever. There's so many implications linked to inflationary times and linked to the government just printing money at will. I mean, we've seen two crazy events in our lifetime. We haven't been impacted too severely from them because we didn't have a whole lot of net worth or assets to be impacted. But 2008 and then COVID, if we knew how to analyze the trends and patterns and actually spent more time reading, trying to understand the inner workings, I'm sure it'd be very depressing and we'd be making a lot more of a stronger effort to make ourselves more resilient in the future for future events. Because if it's happened twice, these, you know, technically it should be like once in a lifetime events happened twice in the last 20 years. I mean, who's to say it's not going to happen next year or in 2030 or whatever. So it's Bitcoin is at the moment currently looked at as the way out of the established and most notable form of economy and everything like that. So it's very interesting, and that's kind of why it's back in the news. I haven't really looked at it for 2 or 3 years since the NFT buzz when we were buying and trading NFTs.
You were buying and trading, and I was just not agreeing, but you explained it to me. I'm like, sounds like a good idea.
We bought a car with NFTs.
That's true. It contributed to it, so.
Well, yeah, it contributed partially to a 15-year-old used car.
So. That we no longer own anyway.
But it's learning. It's all learning, right? Like, yeah. Learn a lot during that phase.
Well, it's like, because with the business that you have now, like in the beginning stage, a lot of it was like you had to go out, drive around, go to stores, all that kind of thing. But stores were closed, had to stay within your localized zone and all that kind of stuff. And so you had to think of alternative ways to, I guess, keep your brain busy and to learn. And that's what you did during that time.
And the best part about it is transactions are instantaneous. Obviously, mm-hmm. with Ethereum and trading NFTs, there's gas fees that can become expensive, mm-hmm. but you're not waiting 3 days for your bank to transfer your money. Or, like, you know, the reason banks take 4 days to transfer your money is because it goes into some account that they can accrue interest on for 2-3 days. And then mm-hmm. that interest is more or less profit for that. Yeah. That bank.
Well, it depends on the bank. Like if you're transferring to, like here in Australia, if you transfer between a bank often enough, it goes the next day or the next, like within like 5-10 minutes.
But still, like if you want to do a large transaction, you want to settle a house, I mean, that's months.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Potentially weeks, potentially months. Mm-hmm. But with the NFTs, you can essentially cash out.
Straight away.
Immediately. Yeah.
And the whole idea about it is, right, like the transaction history is open. You can see where things are getting, like it's not open source. I can't think of the word because I don't know like the language
stuff
around it.
It's a blockchain ledger.
Yeah, yeah. So you can actually read the blockchain and know where the money, exactly where the money
is. It's like provenance. If you buy expensive art, mm-hmm. either like, I don't know, like Picasso or something, they usually have provenance, which is the same thing. It's a ledger of it went from this collector to this collector and then in July 1983, he sold it to this guy and he held it for 25 years. And that's how you can trace it back to the original artist.
Gotcha.
This is just a digitized form of that where it mm-hmm. can't be manipulated. But those provenances, who knows how easy or hard they are to replicate or mm-hmm. forge. So, yeah, some interesting topics going on this week. And it's been an interesting 2024 so far. I'm pretty pumped for it.
Yeah. Well, we're just in the beginning of March. And I feel, honestly, it feels like a lot has happened in such a short amount of time frame. So I think since COVID, things have just been kind of like, I don't know, just like it feels like you're in like purgatory in a way. But like this year really feels like things are moving.
Yeah. Things will slow down when the Olympics come around.
Oh, yeah, just like, the world stops for the girls' sports. The world comes together. For some.
And then again, with the Bitcoin conversation, there's an election coming up in mm-hmm. November or something. So
it's going to be a big year.
It's going to be a gigantic year. Mm-hmm. And you know where to find us for the latest hustle related news, maybe do a little bit more economy stuff perhaps, but just cultural, pop culture and science and business.
Yes.
We'll be here each and every week unless Sarah decides to run away with the crypto lord.
You've got all the passwords. I don't know. I just trust you. We have, you know, Drew's helps look after us and our little family unit financially. So thank you. But it probably wouldn't hurt to, I mean, I like talking about this stuff because it not makes us learn, but it kind of just like keeps us in the realm of upskilling, educating, you know, like, yes, we do talk about movies and stuff, maybe a little bit too often, but I really enjoy these type of topics because I don't know, it just makes you think in a different, puts yourself in a different mindset.
It's like I learn more by
speaking about it.
Speaking and teaching about it. Mm-hmm. And it might not be the most articulate or the most knowledgeable way of getting it across, but it helps me understand that a little bit better. Then the second time I repeat it, mm-hmm. I can refine it, make it a little bit better each time.
Yeah.
So it's passing on the tiny morsels of wisdom that I have.
Yes.
Slowly.
I was going to say like Drew Dollops. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a...
That sounds like what I'd do in the bathroom.
Dollops.
Jeez, let's get out of here. All right, I'll see you next week, guys.
Bye, everybody.